Brian Lehrer and WNYC wishing everybody in education a happy summer vacation. I know the calendar is different in different school systems, but certainly New York City, yesterday was the last day of school for students and teachers, earlier in many other places. I go to private school, it's around May 10th. Just kidding. Certainly colleges and universities, but for the K through 12 world, people getting out around now, boy, is my just finished seventh grader happy, and probably his teachers are equally happy. And yet the hard work for principals may just be starting. Teacher layoffs were avoided in the city, but overall school budgets are being cut an average of 2.5%, 2.4 to be exact, for the coming school year. Attrition will still reduce the number of teachers system-wide by 2,600 in the city, with state aid cuts in New York and New Jersey and Connecticut, with the implications of property tax caps in New York and New Jersey coming into play. Principals are going to have to make really difficult decisions this summer as to what actually happens in your schools in the fall. Joining me now to talk about the budget in the city, elsewhere, to take calls from principals, we hope, is WNYC education reporter Beth Fertig. Hey, Beth.
Hi, Brian.
So principals, I know officially you don't start your summer vacation today in many places, but maybe without the kids and the teachers to prevent you from listening to the radio, you have us on in the background in your office maybe, and you know what kinds of decisions that you're going to have to make now. How do you go about, for your own school, deciding how to cut 2.4% or whatever the number is for you? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We would love to try to hear from some school principals right now. 212-433-WNYC. And Beth, you know, much has been made of the mayor crying wolf when it came to teacher layoffs. People are questioning his credibility because he said really for a couple of years that thousands of teacher layoffs, not just losing jobs by attrition, would be necessary at this juncture. What saved the day?
It was a couple of things. First of all, the mayor had painted himself into a corner. He had said again and again that he wanted to get rid of this law that requires new teachers to be the first to go during layoffs, regardless of merit, which is last in, first out. And he said, if you don't get rid of this, it's going to be disaster when I have to do the layoffs, because then we're going to lose a lot of good teachers. When Albany didn't get rid of that, then he was stuck, because he'd have to concede that a lot of good teachers would go, with probably a lot of bad teachers, a whole mix of teachers for all we know, but 4,100 or 4,600 layoffs, it was going to hurt. So I think it made it much less palatable for him to do it. On top of that, the teachers union and the city council had been saying all along, you know, this really doesn't have to happen. There is city money. You can come up with a way. It's not that expensive in a 60-something billion-dollar city budget to come up with the $300 million or so you need to prevent the layoffs. But the mayor had continued to say, we want to prevent a bigger deficit next year. I can't use all that money right now. I'm going to need it for next year. We're going to have even harder times when federal stimulus dollars are going to be done. So he had, you know, continued to say, I have to do these layoffs. I have to do these layoffs. But if you listened closely in between the lines over the recent weeks, there seemed to be some give. And especially when Chancellor Dennis Walcott would speak, he would say, well, I'm hoping it doesn't come to that. So the council and the union were really able to avert this by coming up with some savings, and also by the city recognizing that there would be more attrition than they initially projected. They originally thought there'd be 1,500 teachers retiring. Then they said 2,000 teachers. Now they've said 25 or 2,600. The teachers union had been saying all along, we expect more retirements than you're saying. So I think they were able to cobble together the money for this year. But the mayor continues to say, next year I'm going to have to do it. And next year is when a new teacher evaluation system is supposed to take effect. It's all tied up with lawsuits and things like that right now. But the union and the governor had said, you know, you won't need to do this very blunt form of layoffs just by last in, first out, if we have a better teacher evaluation system that makes it easier to reward the good teachers and get rid of the bad teachers. So it was a face-saving measure for the mayor to say, well, if I have to do layoffs next year, at least there'll be a better way of doing it.
So let's assume that this 2,600 estimate is right for the number of teachers who are going to retire or otherwise leave this summer. How do they divvy those up? Teachers don't necessarily retire proportionally. So who does the reassigning so no one school bears the brunt of the cuts? And how does that dovetail with this 2.4% budget cut that each principal is going to have to implement or something around that?
I think it's going to be different at every school. If teachers retire, then you're not allowed to replace them. However, you can replace a teacher who is mandated. You know, you can't let your school go without an English teacher if you've got too many kids in third grade, and or a classroom teacher. If you've got too many kids in third grade, you're going to have to get another third grade teacher. But if you can have class sizes go up just a little bit and do without that teacher, then you won't hire another third grade teacher. But certain things are mandated, like special education, bilingual services, and there is a city hiring freeze except for those specialized types of teachers that they're going to still need to hire, which is why they continue to recruit. But overall, you're going to see fewer positions being filled if principals can get away without needing them. And when they have to make this additional budget cut, they may cut things like art, music, things that aren't mandated, enrichment programs for kids. I don't really know how it's going to shake out at every school. And yesterday, Dennis Walcott, when I approached him after a graduation ceremony,
he said, "The school's chancellor."
Yes, he said it should not have to affect instruction. Since we avoided the teacher layoffs, I think the principals can handle it. But I'm curious to hear how they're going to handle it.
And if principals decide they need to save money by cutting teachers, they can excess them, is the term.
Right.
They don't lose their salaries, but then they have to find a new school or they join the substitute teacher pool. Can principals just decide, oh, I don't like this teacher so much, I don't like that teacher so much, I'm going to excess this one?
I think they have ways of doing that. You know, they can encourage certain teachers to leave by assigning a fifth grade teacher to second grade, for example, if they really want to make their life miserable. They could excess teachers, of course. What's interesting about the budget deal is for years we've heard the mayor complaining about this absent teacher reserve pool, ATRs, he calls them. What that means is when teachers lose their position because of budget cuts or because a failing school is closed, for example, they're not fired. They stay on the budget. They continue to get their full salary, but they have to look for a position at another school. Sometimes they're snapped up right away when a school needs another classroom teacher or a sixth grade English teacher. Sometimes they don't get jobs, and then they continue to sub throughout the school year. The mayor has said if principals don't take them right away, that's probably because they're not good teachers. Some of them have been rated unsatisfactory. Some of them may have bad reputations. So the mayor has said we should put a time limit on how long teachers can stay in this pool. But the union has resisted that consistently and said it's up to the city to make better use of these teachers. And so what the city did with this budget deal was they said, well, we are going to make better use of those teachers. We're now going to assign them on a weekly basis to different schools to work as subs. And that way that the schools won't have to hire per diem subs, you know, just a sub to fill in for a sick teacher that day, if they can move these absent teacher reserve teachers all around the city.
With these budget cuts that the principals have to deal with, can they decide to excess more experienced teachers who are therefore making, you know, incomes closer to the higher end of the salary scale, and then maybe hire two younger teachers to replace them? Can they do it officially? Are there ways that they can get away with doing it unofficially for that reason?
I'm not sure. And this is where I'm interested to hear from the principals, because for a while, if a principal had an opening and they wanted to pick one of these subs that were floating around, and the sub made $90,000 a year, that was a disincentive to hire the sub because it would raise the principal's overall budget. And the city said they would step in for a couple of years and help bridge the difference so that it doesn't stay on the school's payroll and become more expensive for the principal. So they had a way of helping the schools out with this. I don't know, though, you know, what the rules are if a principal has to let go of a teacher and says, you know, well, I can do with one fewer third grade teachers this year. Does that mean they're going to pick the one who's more expensive? I suspect there are some union protections to, you know, prevent that from happening.
And supposedly, even in the reform that the mayor wants, and I guess will be negotiated with the governor and others at the state level over the next year, supposedly there will be protections so that, at least officially, principals could not lay off teachers.
Exactly.
For the sake of saving money, only if merit determined that an older teacher was less qualified than a new teacher.
Right.
All right. Now, you know what, Beth? WNYC education reporter Beth Fertig, our guest. Principals are either all working or they're being shy. And principals, we understand if you want to play some of this close to the vest at this point in time. So I'll offer you one more option as we open the phones a little wider now. Why don't you call as Dennis if you're a guy? You don't have to use your real name, just in honor of Dennis Walcott, the school's chancellor. Any male principal can call as Dennis, and any female principal can call as Kathy. And we know who that refers to. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Principals, maybe you had success in publishing, and that's how you got your job in the school system. 212-433-9692. We would still love to hear from some school principals on how you go about dealing with the budget cuts. You don't have to announce any particular teacher's dismissal on the air from your school, but you know what we're talking about. How are you going to balance all these forces? What are the kids going to get less of? Or what difficult choices in terms of the effects on the children, which is who we know you're the most concerned with, are you going to have to make? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And in the meantime, we'll take some of the other calls that are coming in. Stephen in Brooklyn, you're a teacher, huh?
I am, in fact.
Thanks for calling.
I wanted to make, I guess, three succinct points, and since I'm an experienced teacher, I know that being succinct is extremely important. Number one is on the two hidden, I guess, costs the principals are experiencing now that may be a great set story for, you know, for Beth or other folks is, number one, that schools are charged for their students who have outstanding school lunch bills. That is, students who do not get 100% free lunch, they get reduced price lunch or full price lunch. If those kids don't pay those bills, those families, it comes directly out of the school's budget.
Right. I've heard principals talk about how they have to keep reminding the families to chip in, but it doesn't.
The whole piece is that if they don't, in fact, pay, then I know my school has to pay $9,000.
It adds up to that much.
Out of our school's budget. And we have, I have a principal, obviously, who's extremely transparent, intelligent, a good manager of people and of money, and still we're left with this $9,000 bill for something that we have very little control of.
That's pretty interesting. And Stephen, I've heard also that students don't even, by and large, eat these meals, either because they don't like them or because the tickets that you need to get them stigmatize the kids in the school and they don't want to be seen. Does that ring true to you?
No, I find both those statements false, Brian. At least at my school, we have a very well-run cafeteria where children routinely ask for seconds, especially from the middle and the, you know, all the kids, because the food is very good and well-prepared. We have a very well-run kitchen. Maybe we're the exception, but that's my experience.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. And Beth, had you heard that before about the schools being saddled with the bill?
Yes, definitely. But the other bill that they're being saddled with, so to speak, now, which is new, is in the past, principals were allowed to roll over extra money for the coming school year. And a lot of them would budget for that. They'd say, I'm not using all my money. I'm going to stash it aside because next year there's going to be budget cuts. This year, the city is requiring them to give back 30% of their excess funds to the city because of the budget situation. And some principals, to avoid that, went on spending sprees so that they wouldn't have any money left by buying computers and all kinds of supplies that the kids would need next year. But the principals were very angry about having to give that back.
Ike in Long Branch, you're on WNYC. Hello, Ike.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thanks for calling.
I manage a small business, and I was given a 7.5% cut. And my family made do. We went out to dinner one time less. We bought some less clothes, etc. As a manager, I had to cut my payroll, and I had to cut it a lot more than 2.5%.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to only fire the last person, it would be very difficult for me to run the business. It just seems with this excess and the ATR and here these principals spending money on computers and stuff when they may not really need it, there's a lot of waste. It doesn't sound good to me as a taxpayer.
Did you tell our screener you also have children in public schools? Is that correct?
Me? Yes.
And so do you see waste in their schools? Do you have an idea? You mentioned computer purchases as one place that they might save money. Are there other places that you say it? Because I bet a lot of principals secretly listening in their offices right now without calling in are thinking, oh, God, come on. We've been suffering cuts and cuts and cuts since Giuliani was mayor. Where's the remaining fat? You have any idea?
No, I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't know it that well to comment on it. I just know that as a manager, if I had to fire the last person and not the worst person, it would be difficult for me. And the owners told me I must cut my payroll, and I did it, and we made do. And 2.5% just doesn't seem to be that much.
Yes. What, I have a question, though. What if you had to cut 5% last year, 5% the year before, 3% the year before that? Wouldn't it start to add up? That's what the principals complain about.
Yes, it would start to add up, but from my point, we just have to get productivity gains. I mean, there wouldn't be much choice. We would run with less people. We'd get creative. But it's a hard year. But you see, the issue I have here is, I mean, when you talk about the ATR and the excess, you're still paying the salaries. And when you say, well, they wanted to rush and go spend money on computers, it doesn't sound right. They don't want to give the money back.
Right.
It seems like there's something wrong with the system.
I hear you. And I'm supporting reform in last in, first out, so the principals can use their judgment. Ike, thank you for your call. Of course, one difference between a business and the public school system is if, you know, heaven forbid Ike's business were to go out of business, which we wouldn't want to see, that's an option in the economy. A school can't close its doors.
A school also has mandates. You have to give students with special needs certain services. You can't let your class size go to 40. You have to comply with the law. There are union rules on work rules. You can't just get more productivity by having a ninth or tenth period each day. You can't add things like that. So they're bound by a lot of limits. And on top of that, the mayor repeatedly talks about how pension costs are rising, debt service is rising. There are all these fixed costs that the city has to pay for. So in the scheme of things, a principal spending a few thousand dollars at the end of the year on supplies that he or she is going to need next year anyway, it's not really that much wasteful spending, they would argue.
Last thing. Political question. After the Kathy Black debacle and 8 years of or more of Joel Klein with dramatic reforms, respected in many cases, but also extremely controversial and hated by teachers and principals in many cases, how's Chancellor Walcott doing? And does he just get a pass this summer since he was a midseason replacement?
I think he's somebody who is so well-liked, even by people who don't agree with the mayor's policies, that he's done a lot to smooth over some ruffled feathers, and there were a lot of ruffled feathers. And he's getting a pass, so to speak, because he is new, but he's not new. He's been around for the past 9 years of the Bloomberg administration helping to shape education department policies, so nobody for a minute thinks this guy's just coming in from nowhere. He's also been extremely visible. He has gone to at least 16 or 17 graduation ceremonies this week, which I'm told is more than Joel Klein ever did. He is visible at so many community meetings. He's really trying to put the message out there that he's here, he wants to listen to people, but there is a limit because he clearly supports all of the policies of the Bloomberg administration, the reforms that Bloomberg has initiated. So he may put on a much nicer show of listening, parents argue, but he's not always going to change. And that's where you have these lawsuits happening right now over co-locating charters into existing public school buildings, over closing schools. Chancellor Walcott is adamant that these policies are going to be better for the school system. And then there's a group of parents and the NAACP who are suing, so there's still a lot of friction.
And of course, we'll be talking education on and off all summer, giving people in education an opportunity to listen during the off season, and so you can, you know, have kind of a busman's holiday instead of going to the beach, listen to a talk show about your job. Some of you will want to.
And
do that.
Summer school starts Tuesday.
Yeah, right. So back to work, and we'll get principals to call in. Yet I think tomorrow we're going to have your union chief. By the way, Ernest Logan from the Principals Union. I think he's scheduled here, maybe tomorrow, maybe in a few days. We'll see. But WNYC education reporter Beth Fertig, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And coming up next, legendary auto executive Bob Lutz on the future of electric cars. He's a big backer of the Chevy Volt. He will also, speaking of the connection between education and the economy, tell us why he thinks American business has been too much into the, business has been too much into the IQ accumulation business. And then we'll hear some of President Obama's news conference, which is going to start in a few minutes. Stay with us.